Welcome to the Real Estate Way to Wealth and Freedom podcast with Jacob Ayers, providing actionable content to help you along your journey to financial freedom through real estate investing. As the premier asset class, real estate has helped ordinary people just like you amass fortunes. The benefits of passive income from real estate investing will allow you to live a life you want. And now, your host, entrepreneur, real estate investor, and apartment deal syndicator, Jacob Ayers.
All right, today, welcome on the show, David Thompson. David, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Jacob. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you. So, David, could you tell the audience a little bit more about yourself and what drew you to investing in real estate and why you're doing it?
Absolutely. So I worked in the high-tech world for a while, and I think like a lot of people, we're looking to develop some passive income streams on the side. And about 2012, which actually happened to be, Jacob, a pretty good time, right, to enter real estate. So kind of fortunate in that respect. We had a friend of ours who was a realtor, and she was accumulating a lot of homes by herself and had a pretty active business. And she finally convinced us that we can do this.
Yeah.
You know, after listening to all these horror stories growing up of people being landlords, I was kind of shying away from it. But clearly, it was a great asset class. You'd heard about it being a good asset class. So we took the leap in 2012 in Austin here, and we accumulated a handful of properties. She would find the properties for us. We would, and the renters, and we would just basically property manage it after that. So she made it really easy. A lot of handholding.
Yeah, good.
But once we got started, we liked it and started thinking about, okay, how do we keep doing this to potentially maybe take this on as a career? We were enjoying it that much. And then started looking at duplexes and fourplexes in San Antonio, which was a very good cash flowing market, maybe better so than Austin, as it was appreciating pretty quickly. And did a little bit of that. And I just kept reading like a lot of passionate investors about anything and everything about real estate. And I ran into a gentleman that was mentoring people in the commercial real estate space. He was doing really large apartments, and he was quite a bit younger than me. I was like, how do you buy these 200 or 300 unit apartments? You know, it's going to take me forever to get up there. So anyway, I kind of learned about syndication through him, and then was able to finally leave my corporate job and start helping him and raising capital for his deals. And he had pretty good deal flow. So he kept me pretty busy. I learned a lot about syndication, end-to-end processes, and working with investors. And maybe today we can share some things on the more focused on the capital raising side, which is pretty much an area that I focused a lot on here the last year and a half or so.
Yeah, definitely, David. So one thing about you, David, is you have a pretty unique background from your professional career, that a lot of skills that translated well into real estate. So could you talk about how those helped you kind of leave your corporate job and kind of pick up with real estate and continue doing that?
Well, I think I had a fortunate opportunity to work with a lot of great people at these companies, really bright people, different roles, leading people, leading teams, projects. And, I kind of look at an apartment building that we're doing now, 200 or 300 units, as a project. We've got kind of a start and finish. We kind of have a process. We know what we need to be doing. There's schedules and timelines. There's role players. There are certain people who are responsible for finding the deals, underwriting the deals, negotiating the deals, getting financing. There's people involved in talking to investors, raising capital. So I think a lot of those skills, being a good team player, knowing your role, being really good at your role, and seeing the big picture and how you contribute to that. You know, those are the kind of things you learn in the corporate world quite a bit, right? You kind of work in teams and not too much in a silo. And I think that definitely benefited me.
Yeah, good. Definitely. So David, what kind of properties were you initially buying when you were working with that local real estate agent of yours?
Yeah, good question, Jacob. So, we weren't doing any, no flipping, no distressed property type of plays. Her success had been, and she had about, I think she had 20 single family rental properties of her own. She says, listen, we're buying for the long term here, kind of a buy and hold mentality. Let's go ahead and pick up properties of decent value. We'll try to find, at that time, we were trying We had a couple successes with short sales. This is like coming out of the deep recession, right? So you had a few of those, but most of them were just trying to get decent prices in good neighborhoods, good schools that would attract a lot of families. Because her thought would be, hey, you know, don't buy anything probably over 10 years old. Kind of keep it new so you're not going to have a lot of big repairs and expenses initially. Get you off to a good start. Get the cash flow going. Get your experiences with this. And that seemed like a good recipe for success.
Yeah, okay. And these were all single families, I'm guessing?
Yes. Single family rental properties in the suburbs of Austin. And then we migrated to doing a few duplex, fourplexes in San Antonio. But yeah, it started with single family. And I talked to a lot of investors who are interested in some syndication deals. And a lot of them seem to start that way. And whether that's the first house, second house, or the ninth or 10th house, or they decide to make that, you know, their dream to have 100 houses. A lot of people start with the single family rental property and get some experience with that. And then they at some point, sometimes it's faster for others, later for others, they determine that it doesn't scale real well.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's great experiences. And I always encourage people, they don't know where to start. It's a great place to start.
Yeah. So you started with these single families, kind of quickly realized the power of, you know, small multifamilies, and then started growing your portfolio from there. So could you kind of talk about what you've got going on these days, what you're working on, what your portfolio looks like?
Right. So we, when I started getting into the commercial space, the concepts like scale and forced appreciation, some things I hadn't really understood or thought carefully about, made a lot more sense to me. So we kind of stopped our buying program in the single family and small multifamily. And I had already decided to leave the company I was with and go at this full time. You know, that was a big step for me, but it was the right step. It enabled me to really focus on this. But it didn't come with a, you know, if you leave the W-2 job, it's hard to get loans on properties in single family spaces, anything less than 5 units. So I quickly realized that if I was going to leave my job, I was going to have to look at the commercial space where they start looking at income of the property and not so much, you know, kind of what your current job is.
Yeah, right.
So it kind of worked in my favor. I mean, I was forced to kind of look at commercial space, but I was on that trajectory. And then I met the mentor that I was really kind of looking for, had the time, definitely was growing passion around this space, and found a role on a team. I'm part of the general partnership with a group of folks that are really committed to this space, have a lot of experience in all aspects of apartments. And basically what we buy are value add apartments. And typically, I would say between 200 to 300 units is really our buying criteria right now. And we're heavily focused on the Dallas-Fort Worth area. We like the market dynamics, as a lot of people do, a lot of jobs and people coming in. And I found a role on the team, essentially helping them out, raise capital. I do a variety of roles. I do some due diligence. I have investor relations activities related parts of my role. But I'm really at the forefront of working with accredited investors. And you know, introducing them, basically educating them on the apartment space, because I find, Jacob, a lot of people have never invested in apartments before. You know, never. How would you ever thought about how would I get invested in a 200 or 300 unit apartment?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a very straight path. You know,
right. I mean, especially when people are coming from, you know, owning a couple of single family rental properties, and now they hear about syndication, and they hear about, you know, all sorts of different concepts, crowdfunding. They hear about getting a limited partnership. What's that all mean? So, you know, it's kind of my role to educate people big picture on what this is all about, and to specifically talk about, you know, if they meet our criteria of accredited investor and it fits their suitability requirements, is, hey, this is something that makes sense for me. Then I go into my, you know, really educating them on the market, the deal, and the team, and why this might make sense. And I enjoy it. I really enjoy this part of it. I bartended my way through college, so I guess that's where I got really comfortable talking to people. And I married up a degree. I had a degree in finance, so I've always liked and passionate about investing. And I like working with the team, and it's a great team to work with. And then my degree in finance was financial planning, kind of inviting. So I think in the back of my mind, I always thought that you know, the education part comes with understanding someone's portfolio to some extent, and just, you know, I stay focused on helping them with the investment that they're looking at. But, you know, invariably people will ask me about my experiences and my thoughts, and, you know, willing to share them based on just, hey, here's what I'm thinking, right?
Yeah, right. So David, what kind of importance did having that initial mentor play in your trajectory of a, you know?
Yeah, that's all right. It's Friday. It's hard to roll it off, right? So I think, Jacob, when people ask me all the time, because I've had a lot of success in this space, and I do blogging, and I do these podcasts, and I have a website where I'm actively posting up my blogs and things. And so I get a lot of people coming to my site through BiggerPockets and various real estate forums, and they ask me the question, like, how do I get started? You know, and one of the best things I think that happened to me was actually hired this guy. He was a mentor, and I still think he's more of a business partner and friend now. But in the beginning, I thought I wanted to be exposed to someone who is very experienced and credible. I didn't know it at the time I wanted to be a capital raiser working for a syndication team. That wasn't really I didn't know that existed or what that role was. I just knew that, my original goal with this guy was like, I want to go buy maybe a 50 unit apartment or 75 unit apartment with some friends of mine and show me how to do that. Show me how to analyze the market, a deal. Tell me the language of commercial real estate. But what dawned on me early on was I was going to probably be swimming upstream if I was going to be talking to investors for the first time or lenders for the first time. They said, kind of, what's your experience in commercial investing? And I would have to say, kind of not. I don't have anything.
What experience?
This coach is coming with me. So, I mean, the coach gave me confidence to know the language and to understand what I was talking about. But I decided that this coach also had some good connections. But my trajectory changed about 3 months into this when I realized I was going to still be kind of swimming upstream. But he offered an opportunity to help him. So if you can find someone in the space to leverage their credibility and experience, and I wasn't looking for a paid income. My wife certainly would was asking, hey, to come with money. I wasn't really thinking about that at the time. Obviously, it does. And it's nice because you're part of the general partnership and you're rewarded how the project does. But, I was really looking for just gaining experience and leveraging those guys' experience and credibility greatly accelerated my knowledge and my credibility, if that makes sense. Like, I'm like, it would have taken me a lot more years to get where I am now than in a little over 18 months, raising almost $13 million and having over 100 accredited investors. I've answered so many questions from investors. I've gotten so much knowledgeable about how these deals work. And I would have never got there if I never hired the coach. Yeah, I just never would have got there. I would have maybe knocked on doors, but I wouldn't even know that was what I could do for him.
Yeah, right. So, that's something we talk a lot about on the show, David, is the power of partnerships. And when you're saying exactly. You're going at this thing, you're going at it by yourself and going to lenders or investors saying, well, I don't have any commercial experience. By partnering up with somebody and the right person, you're able to leverage that person's strengths and experiences and capabilities and all their past experiences in this industry. And you're able to team up with those people. And now it's, well, we have this experience and we have this properties and all of this stuff. So really is able to help you proceed with your goals.
Yeah, absolutely, Jacob. And I'll tell you one thing. You said something. It doesn't have to be a coach. That could come from a person that already in the industry or a person that knows somebody in the industry that has the experience willing to take on. And I would just ask that question, how can you help them? And don't be looking for a monetary reward for that so much. You can get a lot of experience and while you're still working your full-time job, just try to get around those people. Try to get some conversations going with them. Where do they hang out? Can we get some help directly helping them? But you're right. It's interesting. On my first deal, I was able to raise $1 million in 2 weeks, which kind of surprised my coach and myself. And then I put together a top 10 things I learned from that experience. And I was just, it's funny when we're talking, I just pulled it up because the number one thing was partner with experts.
Yeah. Well,
that was it.
So David, what are some of those top 10 things that you learned? I think that'd be really valuable to share with the audience.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll run through them. And anyone that resonates with you, we can talk a little better if you have some comments on them. So the first one that we covered pretty well, that just to get you there faster, right? Partnering with experts and credibility gets you there faster with investors and lenders. The second thing was my learning and development. I didn't really think about it at the time, but I learned a ton. I had to go to the property, do the due diligence with the partnership team. I talked to the current property manager. I went into the units and reviewed the property and the surrounding neighborhoods to validate kind of what the business deck and the marketing deck was talking about. And I just got, the more I discussed it and researched it and, answered people's questions on it, especially investor questions. And they have investors can usually have the same questions after a while, but then there's always a new question, so
That I left just keep field getting, one, right?
Yeah, absolutely. After about, I've done eight deals now, and I think I've, you know, there's still questions out there, but you just get more confident. And the more you answer the questions, the more you do some research, your confidence level goes up. You're learning and development. I mean, I'm doing blogs now, and like I'm only 18 months into this, but if you read my blogs, you probably could think this guy's been doing it a long time. And it's basically by doing it and working with experts that really know what they're doing, and your development can take off. So that was number two. Obviously, having a great project's the key. I don't just talk to investors about any project. You know, I'm vetting these projects too, not with the partners, but I'm getting handed projects and getting involved in projects where we have a great market. We have a really nice conservative underwriting deal. Numbers make a lot of sense. The business plan's clear and the team's experienced, and they can show that they've had success with their past projects. And so that's important. You know, when you're raising capital, you want to be working with the best people, and you want to have products that you believe in and that you'd put your own money into, which we do. We put our own money into our deals. And I get asked that question a lot. Hey, do you put your own money into? Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course.
Yeah, you know, you do, and the partnership certainly does. The fourth thing is preparation. Before you start raising capital, Jacob, I tell folks today who are interested in helping me, I said, well, the first thing I would do is make a spreadsheet of all the people you know who might be accredited, you know, see how far you go. When you're young, you may not know too many people who've got $1 million net worth, minus their property, primary resident, or you know, meet the income criteria. But you know, let's see what you got, and what maybe you can help me in a different capacity until you've maybe developed a thought leadership platform to get your name out there. So preparation before the deal starts, maybe 4 to 6 weeks to really raise capital, and you have a finite number to raise. Right. So if I have to go out and raise $1 million or $2 million, that timeline and the amount is really the only pressure I feel like I have. And I've done it so many times, I'm so successful at doing it, I now like it. I really like it. I mean, it's like, I wish I could, you know, most of the time I'm asking the sponsor for, can I do more, you know? And if I underestimate, sometimes I can't get more. So I leave investors out of the deal, and I don't like that. So
yeah, awesome.
So, that's a good problem to have. Preparation is good. It's a good problem to have, right? Relationships are essential. This is number five. Like, it's interesting, when I left corporate world, I thought my natural affinity groups for folks being maybe accredited or people who knew me in a capacity of a business person was my former employer, or I was going to a multifamily meetup group here in Austin, which I enjoyed. And so I thought, well, when I start, because I wasn't hanging around country clubs, I wasn't hanging around places you would think people have money. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, right.
Let's put it that way. So to your listeners who are starting out, don't intimidate. Don't just because David Thompson is doing a good job, don't think he was, just the natural, like he was born in the right place, right time. It took hustle, but it was funny because the corporate employer I had, and also the multifamily meetup group, I thought those would be the best places to start, and they ended up not being. The multifamily meetup group, those are mostly active people, and they might not be accredited. They've got a lot of different interests. I got a few people out of that. The other group was the former employer. I think people naturally are like, when you leave a company, and I've worked with this company for many years, I think when you first leave a company and then 3 months later you say, hey, I'm doing this business, I think most people will probably say, hey, great, thanks for letting us know, but let me see how that goes for a while.
Yeah, yeah. Seems a little crazy.
Right. I mean, it's okay, but you know, let's just see how successful you are before you come back and talk to me. So I had a few people from that, and actually a couple of people that came in a big way that kind of helped me going. But outside of that, what ended up happening is the two biggest areas I was doing, my coach was very instrumental in telling me, Dave, you need to develop a thought leadership platform. And I looked at him like, a what? What's a thought leadership platform?
Yeah, what do you mean exactly by that,
Dave? Yeah, he says, well, Dave, you got to have a website, of course, but think about ways you can reach your audience. And he says, you know, maybe you can blog about the industry that you're working in. I mean, you're learning some things, you can certainly share. BiggerPockets was, I was going into the apartment forums, and the more experience I had, Jacob, I could answer more questions. So people got to know me as more credible in the space, right? And then I have a newsletter for current clients and also prospects I was meeting that weren't ready yet. And they can stay in touch with me and about what projects I'm working on, or at least get some education from me. I was doing a variety of things, kind of like this podcast for you. It's a great way to get people to know what you're doing, what you're all about. That's thought leadership. And what ends up happening now, I have people coming to my website. I mean, in the beginning, on my first deal, I feel like I'm chasing, right?
Yeah, right.
Where's a person that might be interested? Uh-huh. By my eighth deal, I don't chase at all. In fact, I feel like I attract wealth. I certainly feel like I attract wealth. I create content. I'm out there. It's a purposeful, consistent effort, and it's paying off big time. I'll have days where I have 5 people visit my website and sign up for my newsletter. That happened a couple of weeks ago. I'm like, that's a record. I told my wife, that's a record. And it just keeps going. It just keeps going. So people are coming to me. They say, hey, I read your blog, or, you know, I listened to you on a podcast. Or so it's funny, but success breeds more success. And I just feel like the first couple of deals were, I learned a lot, really leveraging my team and everything. And now as this thing takes on a whole new meaning, you know, my company is Thompson Investing. It's not the company I support on the capital raising side. Now I'm a partner with them. I'm a general partner in their deals. The SEC requires me to be a part of their partnership, which plays into my favor. And I like that, but I have a separate company. The company has now evolved into other areas, working with other operators that I like mobile home parks or self-storage. So now my business has changed from, here's where we started. My business started as, I'm going to go buy a 50-unit apartment with my friends. Hey, coach, help me how to do that.
Yeah, right.
to 3 months later saying, you know, let's chuck this idea because I might be swimming upstream. How about I just leverage your credibility, get there faster instead of learning all the things, making a lot of mistakes? Why don't I do this? Why don't I help you? And in no financial capacity, just how can I help you? Well, you have to be part of the general partnership, so you have an equity stake. I was like, that worked in my favor.
Oh,
but
darn.
The most important thing, The most important thing was experience. And here's what these guys told me, which was huge. And I would offer the same thing for anybody who would work with me down the road, is the investors that you bring to the table are your investors. And Jacob, that was huge, because it's not their investors. Of course, we're all in it together as a team. We work together as a team to make this particular project a success. And I'll have those investor relations for 5 years, but I can introduce those investors to my newsletter. I can introduce those investors to other deals outside of this sponsorship. No big deal. These are my investors. That's huge. That was huge for me. And so I kind of went full a little bit out there on this comment, but this was supposed to be number 5. Relationships are important. It ended up, all that thought leadership platform developed a huge response from the Bigger Pockets network. Okay. It could be any real estate network. This one is the one I've been on for 4 years, and they have apartment forums, and I'm also able to put my blogs up there. So that's been a huge source of people coming to my website. The second source was my wife's network. She had a really interesting network. She came from the legal side, but she had a specific network that really liked real estate. My wife's Chinese, but in her culture, they stay connected very well. They really stay really well connected. So they share ideas with each other a lot. I found out they enjoy real estate. They haven't had a history of really good, solid stock market, really volatile. So they tend to understand real estate, hard assets a lot. So those two really started out when I first started capital raising, Jacob. Those are my best sources. Bigger Pockets and my wife's network. And that wasn't, again, something that was a surprise for me, right?
Yeah,
those are two new networks that just kind of grew. And today, here's what's even better. Today, 50% of my investors are return investors from other projects. And about 35%, I do this every deal, I do this analysis. I just finishing up one right now. 35% are referrals from those folks. So if your business is repeat customers and referrals, and maybe you're only adding 10 to 15% new people, which is a healthy business anyway. You always want to be adding new to keep it fresh. That's huge. And that's where this kind of business has grown to in, I don't know, maybe 18 months. It's just amazing.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, it speaks volumes for yourself and what you're doing, and it's validation, right?
Validation, good projects, good team, and just knowing that, you know, if you have a plan that doesn't work out, there's other avenues. Right? There's other avenues. Don't quit if you're passionate about it. I'm absolutely passionate about it. I think you can probably tell in our discussion, but let's move on to point 6, raise 20-30% more than you need. It's probably maybe 5% more than I need now, because like I said, if you have more return investors, they pretty much know the drill. When you first start out, you probably want to have a little bit higher backup, because life events happen to people. You know, people may have wanted to sell a piece of real estate. They're not very liquid to put money into your deal, and it doesn't happen. House didn't sell.
Yeah, you know? Right.
I find most people don't drop out of the deal because they got stage fright or suddenly didn't like the deal. Most people, if I've gone through the deal with them, they understand it. They like the deal. It may just be either it's a money timing issue, or there's a life event that happens to them, Jacob. And I think you and your listeners can understand this. Listen, if there's a death in the family, if there's all of a sudden your job may be at jeopardy, you know, anything happening emotionally, a big emotional thing in your life, everything tends to stop.
Yeah,
everything
tends
to stop. And rightly so, right? I mean, I don't want people thinking about an investment. I mean, we have other investments, all right? Don't worry about it. Coach them to go back and don't worry about it. Don't make it difficult for them to get out of any discussion with you. It's just like, I get it. go take care of that. We'll get back with you later time. I wish you the best, whatever that is, you know? And I think that's served me well. And I don't get surprised anymore. I expect one or two times per deal for some life event to happen to somebody. And I hope that, we catch them at another time when things are better for them, right? So, but the reason why I say raise 23% more, you're getting close to this timeline on the deal. And you have a big investor out there that maybe 10% or of your take, and all of a sudden that person goes away. You don't want to be scrambling and trying to find another $100,000, $200,000 at the last minute. You know, perhaps you don't have the back. Today I have a big backup just naturally because I can't get people in a deal. But when I was starting out, I was like, "You got to be kidding, Joe! I just got to $500,000, and now you're telling me." Oh, it's probably a good idea to get 23% more.
Yeah. Oh, gee, thanks. I'll just get back out there and continue hustling. Yeah,
no problem. I'll get that tomorrow.
Yeah, right.
So, but for new folks involved in capital raising, I think the key thing is be a little more conservative up front. And then as you get better at it, you'll have probably less drop off, or naturally have more backup to fill just naturally because they can't get in the deal. There's so much demand for it. And then it's a good problem to have. Number seven, first come, first serve. I have very few sales techniques. In fact, Jacob, when I started this business, I failed tremendously. I failed so bad at sales and marketing when I got out of college. I was the worst of the worst. It was as bad as my technology skills when, we were trying to get this headset going today. I had a degree in finance, but I wanted to be in financial planning when I came out of school, out of college. And I didn't realize it was an entrepreneurial job. No one was going to give me a job being a financial planner. If you look at a financial planner, they all have their own deal. It's their own shop, you know? It's a one or two person shop typically.
Yeah, right.
So, the only person that would hire me and give me any kind of a salary was a big insurance company. And they just basically said, the only way you make money is we'll front you the money off of future commissions, but you need to go out and sell these two products. And I was like, well, what's that? Is that whole life insurance and disability insurance? Well, here I am, a young guy thinking about stocks and all these kind of cool things I can think about being a financial planner. And I was like, that's part of it. Insurance is part of it. But I was taught like buy cheap term insurance, invest the difference. It was just all these concepts that was kind of foreign to me. And I wasn't really passionate about it. I lasted about 6 months in that and decided I was going to go to graduate school. and even to this day, I mean, I tell you what, if my mentor coach who said, yes, I'll take you up on the opportunity, he would have told me it was kind of a marketing sales role. First of all, it's not a marketing sales role. Number one, you're educating people and you're just finding out if it's a good time for them. That's it. You're just educating people. I never feel like I'm doing any kind of sales and marketing, but if he told me that was the job, I probably wouldn't have taken it. After that experience, I'm like, I don't want anything to do with sales and marketing. Right. And I bartended in school. I liked people. I was really outgoing. I liked people. It was just, the difference was this time I was passionate about what I'm doing. And I felt that the other thing that was cool, when I met people who wanted to invest, they had no clue. I had never been exposed to investing in a 200, 300 unit apartment. So Jacob, if you're that person and I come to you, everything's new. You're like, oh
yeah,
my God.
It's a foreign concept, right?
Kind of tell me about it.
Yeah. How does it work? Like what's the general partnership? Things like that.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're asking questions and I'm in that mode with you of a teacher, right? I'm teaching. And it's that great relationship. It'll go an hour conversation. I'm teaching about why I like the market, why I like the deal itself, why I like the team. And you come away from that experience educated, and I feel good about giving that education. And it takes so much pressure off of this being kind of a transactional thing. And it takes so much pressure off because I'm like, this may not be right for you at all. It's very few say that. Very few say that, absolutely. Because it's like, cool. I mean, look at the numbers. Look how this thing works. But what I get out of it is that because I'm in that position, I'm like, hey, either the money is there or it's not. Either the timing is good for you or it's not. No big deal. At least I've exposed you. We've connected. We now developed a relationship. You're now on my newsletter. And hey, the next opportunity, I know you're accredited. I know you qualify. Hey, we'll do something. You have a life event, no worries. We'll do something down the road. And if you take that long-term perspective, that's cool. And that works really well. Again, another long-winded way around this number seven was first come, first serve. The only thing, if you would say there's any kind of a sales technique, and it just happened because it's structured this way, is I have a time limit and I have an amount limit. Okay. So Jacob, if you're coming to me and I need $1 million and I have $950,000 already, I only need 50,000 more. When I'm talking to you, I'm just going to tell you, listen, you've got the information and everything. I want you to think about this for a couple of weeks, but I would recommend you at least reserve a spot. Our minimum is 50,000, reserve a spot, no obligations. You're going to finish going through the PPM and until you sign this thing and actually fund it. several weeks down the road. Go ahead and hold the spot, because if we lose the spot for you, I can't guarantee you in the deal. That's the only thing. If you call, if you tell me that's a sales technique, that's it. I mean, I'm just honest with people. That's true. I hate having people can't get in a deal because they sat around 3 or 4 weeks thinking it's a pretty good deal, but I really haven't got around to looking at it deeply or whatever. I'm like, listen, we'll have time to get around to all your questions. Reserve a spot.
Yeah,
so right. I use this first come, first serve.
I think a lot of stuff you're preaching here, David, is a lot of transparency. You're being very open with the investors. You're educating them. You're being honest, telling them why you like the deal. You know, you're investing alongside with them. So, you know, you are an investor just like they are. And I think that's probably a really good fundamental basis for your investors to keep coming back to you and reasons to, you know, trust you and continue to do deals with you.
You hit it on the nose. I tell people a lot, just be yourself. You know, be authentic and talk to people the way you'd like to be talked to, which is, I'm educating you. Just give me some time. Let's go through it. If it's not a good time, we'll get back. But I love to have the wife, the spouse, or vice versa. I love to have a spouse together because I get everybody at one time.
You know, yeah.
There's a few techniques I learned in the 6 months I failed at it. So I haven't read many sales books. I'm afraid if I did, I start feeling too techniquey, too many techniques. And I really shy away from that because I've had success just being who I am, working with good people and having good deals to talk to people about. And I think that authenticity, I think you're right. I think that helps quite a bit. Let me just run through these last three, Jacob, because I want to make sure we touch on these and then we can address your other questions if you have.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Referrals. You know, in the beginning, I certainly didn't ask for many referrals from people because, you know, it was, they're doing the deal for the first time. So they needed the experience before they give me referrals. I get a few and I don't really ask for them. You know where I ask for them? In my newsletter at the very bottom, I tell people, thank you for the referrals. Instead, I don't ask for referrals. Just thank you for my referrals as a once a month newsletter. And it's not a bad idea to ask for them, but I find I get a lot of referrals unsolicited. You'd be surprised how many people are talking to their neighbor or their family member or someone they work with and said, you know, I just got into this cool investment. We're talking at lunch or something. And hey, that sounds interesting. Can you put me in touch with that guy? And then they'll do a three-way email and we'll start a conversation. I'll take it from there. And that's an easy thing to do for someone. You don't have to, I'm not asking you to market the deal. definitely don't ask you to sell it because I don't sell them.
Yeah,
I don't want you to, it's an accredited investor thing. I have to make sure I'm talking to the right people. So I don't want you to even think, you know, I don't even know if they're accredited or not. I don't want you to ask any of those questions. Just if you have somebody that's passionate like you about what you're doing, and you'll invariably those referrals are just kind of coming to me natural. But you know, there's probably some ways to ask for them once in a while if people haven't thought about it. So don't forget to ask for them, but don't be surprised if they come to you naturally, right? Especially if you're doing a good job. Timing is everything. We already kind of talked about that, you know, in people's lives. So just don't force the issue. Come back, start a relationship, come back with them when it's a better time. The last thing, number 10, was it takes a lot of focus and family support to raise capital. It's a very short period of time. You have to set up appointments, typically phone calls, coffees if people are in the city where you live. And you have to get to this number. And I raise the number on me all the time because I like the challenge. But you know, you got to be, it really takes a family support. So here's what I tell people. Understand your life schedule. Understand if it's the first time you're doing it, make sure your family kind of knows what you're getting into. You may have to cancel some regular things that you attend. If you're coming up to a big vacation, I wouldn't advise doing it on a vacation. I've actually done it on vacation, but I was pretty experienced at it, right? And like I said, 50% of my people are coming back. So a lot of that's just before everybody gets up, I send some emails out. So you know, it was tolerable. But in the beginning, when you're getting new to this kind of thing, make sure you understand what your family is doing and seek their support. You're going to need to sleep. You're going to need to eat. And you're going to need to make sure you have your health breaks. The rest of the time, you're really hustling. And it's a maybe a 6 week activity of pretty good intensity. But when you're done and you hit the number and you it's a project and you know you have an end, there's an end. Okay, there's an end to this thing. You close on the property. Everybody congratulates you. You've got the property done. There is some minor investor relations support during the 5 years of the project lifestyle, but it's minor. The actual partnership I work with does a lot of the back office support for administrative questions. If I have some other questions, I can deal with the investor, but 80%, 90% of my time is in 6 weeks on that particular investment. And so just stay focused, make sure your family knows what's going on, and give yourself every opportunity to be successful. So that's kind of the 10 points.
Yeah, awesome, David. Well, those are really good points, stuff that only you can really learn by, you know, lessons learned, like you call them. So really good stuff to share with the audience, things to think about, things to be aware of, stuff that you might not catch unless you had a mentor or have done it. So really good stuff. Thanks for that. So David, you're raising a lot of money investing in all these syndicated deals.
What are your future goals?
So what I'm doing now, Jacob, is building, you know, basically building a platform so that I can introduce my investors to other areas besides large value-add apartments. I think that'll be a core going forward, but I have had good discussions with some other operators who are experts in their niche, whether that's self-storage, mobile home parks. I want to be thoughtful and progress at the right pace. I don't want to be, 32 flavors to everybody. I want to be careful. I mean, there's so many interesting areas. I mean, assisted living, student housing, there's lots of interesting things in real estate. I want to continue to get educated in a particular space. I want to strike up a relationship with experienced partners in that space and then introduce my investors and educate them on some new spaces so that, you know, I can continue to grow with them and they can continue to grow with me. That's really the concept.
Yeah, awesome. Well, really good stuff, David. So David, what are your reasons why? What's keeping you going? What drives you? What motivates you?
Well, you know, we were talking about success begets success. I really feel, you know, when I started this thing, I didn't have a lot of aspirations for where I wanted to go with it. And it's just like brick by brick, you know, it just seems like it keeps going. And I find new ways that I want to grow with the business and make it accessible to people and real for people. But I think what keeps me going is, you know, I did the corporate job for 20 years. I met some fantastic people. I traveled all over the world. I worked on some really fascinating projects. But when I left it, I really felt that, boy, the freedom of my time has been huge. Austin's got kind of a challenge with traffic, right? So I schedule all my meetings from 10 o'clock at 10 o'clock or 2 o'clock. I'll have lunch with people. I avoid traffic times. I really have a lot of opportunity to take care of my family. And I have two daughters. One's in college and one's in high school. But, you know, I'm able to take care and get to them and do things with them at any kind of time because I have that flexibility with my time. So that's really motivating to continue to be able to be an entrepreneur. I mean, just think about how creative you can be if you had the flexibility of your schedule not to drive or commute to some place that you didn't really care to be for it with after a few years. And to have the flexibility to meet people you want to meet with. So that I talk to and meet people. Most of the people, it's because I want to meet with them and talk to them. And, you know, when you see the business growing and you're kind of this passion around it. I'm pretty passionate about real estate in general, but when you see the deals working for people and you see investors benefiting from them and investors wanting to learn more, it just, you want to give it your all, you know?
Yeah, awesome. It's really important to have a reason why in this business, David, as you know. I mean, there's trials, tribulations, there's challenges. And
yeah, absolutely. I've got some horror stories we can tell when I first started. I mean, that'll be for another show maybe someday, but I mean, I don't want to paint it like it's just a rosy picture. You got to have to work hard. But if you're passionate about something, and Jacob, I know you probably experienced this in your life or your listeners have, if you're doing, let's just call it a hobby, something you love to do, you usually have to be interrupted to stop.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Your friend or your wife or your spouse or, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, someone's saying, you know, listen, need time for me or need time for somebody else, you know? And that means you love it. That means you could go on forever. You're in the zone. And I feel like every day when I wake up, the time I go to bed, I'm in the zone with my business. I mean, I love talking about it. I love working with people. There's not many times, but in the beginning, that first deal, you know, there was a little sweat equity. There was a lot of sweat equity in that, right? And building those first customers and really answering some of those tough questions. And, you know, there were some things that didn't go right and you just learn from them. But if you're passionate about it, you'll keep going. If you have that passion, you like it, you just keep going. And those little things don't bother you as much. If you don't like what you're doing, then those things become monumental.
Yeah, definitely.
You're not going to overcome them. Yeah. If you don't like
Yeah, really good point. All right, David, as we're wrapping up here, we've got a lightning round, just a series of questions we'd like to shoot at you and you just answer from the hip. How's that sound?
That sounds great.
All right, let's get into it then. All right, first question we've got for you is, what was your biggest hurdle getting started investing in real estate and how'd you overcome it?
Well, the biggest hurdle for me was I was listening to all the people when I was growing up, whether it was friends or family members, that it seemed like for some reason you would only hear the horror story of being a landlord or owning property. I know my father had a fourplex down in Phoenix and I would say maybe a class D area. And I was just always hearing about, you know, the tremendous things that happened to his property from the renters. You know? And I was like, why would he want to do that outside of his job? You know, you hear that growing up and you see a friend at work, he's always complaining about his real estate and how people trash. And I strayed away from real estate a long time because of that. And it was only because some friend of ours kept hammering away at us, saying, I don't see why this is a big deal and I can make it easy for you. And we took the plunge. So, you know, the biggest hurdle was just myself overcoming the fact that I was listening to too many people and not actually experiencing it myself. And I found out that it wasn't that hard.
Yeah, good. All right.
David, do you have a personal habit that contributes to your success?
I like to read. I think it's important to spend some time outside of whatever you're passionate about, whatever you're doing for your full-time commitment, and take time for yourself. And read things that kind of give you, I'm big on reading things. It doesn't have to be motivational anymore. It's more just perspectives on different books that kind of give you a healthy perspective on either your business or your personal life or different things like that. So I think reading is good. And it can be just 15 minutes or 30 minutes, wherever you can find it. I just make it consistent and do it at the right time. I tend to do it in the morning after I have a coffee, before I even hit the email. I'll just take 15, 30 minutes to read something positive.
Yeah, awesome. Good. David, do you have an online resource you find valuable?
The online resource, I mean, at this point, I mentioned Bigger Pockets earlier. That's become integral to my business. So I learned from that resource. I share a lot of information out on that resource, and it's becoming a big part of my business from a standpoint of clients and also helping and mentoring other people in the business.
Yeah, awesome. David, what book would you recommend to the listeners and why?
A lot of good ones. I read a book here recently called Deep Work, by Cal Newport. Again, one of these books I was mentioning earlier, kind of a perspective on things. And his basic premise around that book was, you know, we spend so much time with smartphones and email and everything, and it's so easy just to stay on them all the time that you never really step back. And your day becomes jumping from one fire to another. And you may have a list of two or three essential things you want to get done, but he's talking about, how do you work on your business and not in your business? So if you can, his goal was to get you to 4 hours a day. Now, I don't know if I could get to 4 hours, but it was basically finding that time. And he chose, you know, whatever that time would be. And he was a professor. He ended up being he published so many great articles and everything. And he only found that when he was able to find time to do what's called deep work, and it takes a while to get into deep thinking about whatever is important to you. So I'm trying to carve out some time on a consistent basis to deeply think, step back away from my business and think about where I want it to go. It seems pretty obvious, but I think it's becoming more of a difficult time in this world as we live in today of all these distractions we have. So a good book, recommend readers, your listeners to check it out.
It's, yeah, awesome.
Deep Work. Yep. Cal Newport.
We'll link that book in the show notes for our listeners.
Perfect.
All right. And last question, David, if you were to give advice to your 20-year-old self to get started investing in real estate, what would it be?
I think the most important thing is read a lot and then also start networking in whatever area you feel most sounds right to you. If you're 20 years old, you probably don't have a lot of money. So you might look at different types of real estate that can provide some kind of income for you. That could be like wholesaling, or it could be flipping houses with a partner who has money or you have some skills. I think the best thing is assess your skills. Do I have money? Do I have time? What am I passionate about? Go read up about those things and start networking. There's typically, like in Austin, I know there's a networking for all these types of niches that attract you to real estate. And maybe go check out a bunch of them if you don't know. You know, check out a bunch of them and see, hey, that kind of resonates and matches up a little bit with my skill sets, my time, capital, what have you. And find if, you know, just get out there and see if you might find some partners, you might find some projects to work on. And don't be fearful like I was when I was 20 years old to hear all the horror stories. Get past it.
Yeah, good, good. Yeah, just getting out there, you know, exposing yourself, learning, networking, yeah, you know, growing. It doesn't take a lot of effort, and it's you know, almost free to do. So absolutely.
And Jacob, you know what? Really quick, you'll find that most people in this business want to share.
Yeah, that's very true. That is.
I think, you know, I'm sitting here talking to you on a podcast. I love talking about what I'm doing. You're giving me the platform to do it. So, I really appreciate that. But, you know, you find a lot of people just want to share, and we've all been there. We've all been there, and we've had some really challenging experiences, but people want to help, and don't be afraid to ask.
Yeah, very good. Very good points, David. All right, David, as we're wrapping up here, is there any parting piece of advice you'd like to leave with the audience?
You know, from a standpoint of syndication and large value add apartments, I mean, if you're 20 years old, and you were thinking, I can never even see myself in that role. Now, I went from single family to 300 unit apartments in let's say just close to less than 2 years, right? Don't limit yourself. Don't think you have to have this trajectory of, I have to buy single family properties, then I have to buy a duplex and a fourplex. That's a traditional way, and it is a way, and it works successfully for a lot of people. But know that there are ways in the business to accelerate your success. And that could be a coach, which I think is huge. It could be finding the right area that does have a lot of upside, that if you're going to give your time and sweat equity into it and your smarts into it, you might as well find something that has a lot of reward.
Awesome. Yeah, great. Great stuff. All right, David. Well, thanks for that. Where can our audience learn more about you or connect with you if they have any other questions?
So yeah, the website is thompsoninvesting.com. And then I have my emails at david@thompsoninvesting.com.
Okay, great. We'll link those things in the show notes. And David, we certainly appreciate you coming on the show today. Lots of great content, lots of great advice. We look forward to next time.
Jacob, thanks so much for the time. I appreciate it. Enjoyed talking with you.
Absolutely. Thank you, David. Take care.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Real Estate Way to Wealth and Freedom podcast, providing you actionable content to build your real estate empire. Nothing on this show should be considered specific, personal, or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, financial, or business professional for personal advice. The opinions of guests are their own. Information is not guaranteed. All investment strategies have a potential for profit or loss. The host is operating on behalf of the Real Estate Way to Wealth and Freedom, LLC, exclusively.